So hi, and welcome to episode 28 of The Art of Relating. I'm your host, Zach Schwartz, and this show is about learning and practicing the concepts and skills it takes to interact more effectively and more positively, both at home and at work and out there in the community. So remember, if you have questions or comments, you can write me at zach@kepw.org, or you can visit my website at dineskills.com, D-Y-N-S-K-I-L-L-S, where there are books and podcasts of all these radio shows and workshops and trainings and other things that can help you in your journey to master and apply these concepts and skills. Remember, the easy part is learning what the skills are. The hard part is integrating them into your habits of how you interact on a daily basis. That takes practice, and that part's up to you. So we always start the show with grounding. So let's get grounded. Remember your bottom half, securely attached to the earth, because emotions are like electricity and the earth is your ground, and you want the electricity to have somewhere to go. You want to be a wire, not a battery. That means you want the energy to move through you. Use it when you need it, leave it when you don't, and not store it. So feet on the ground. If you're standing, you're shoulders width apart with your feet, more or less. Too wide, you lose flexibility. Too narrow, you lose strength, and grounded is strong, and grounded is solid. So set your bottom half, that's your base. Set your top half. The two principles there are relax, but hold a shape. Hold a shape that says, I'm confident, I love myself, but relaxed. Joints are open, muscles are relaxed as much as you can. Step three is to breathe. Deep belly breaths that will start to trigger what we call your parasympathetic nervous system, get you a little mellowed out, let go of tension. So when you breathe in, fill up that gut. When you breathe out, let it all go. A couple of grounding breaths. Add anything you want to enhance those breaths, light, color, whatever you might want to visualize. But the important thing here is deep in the gut, let it all go. Shake out the kinks. That's number four. So all the places you know you usually hold tight, let those go. And then self-talk. Remember, two relaxers, two affirmers, two unhookers. So I say to myself, calm down, chill out. I say to myself, I'm a good person. I'm doing the best I can in this moment. I love myself. I have value. Whatever phrases make sense to you. And the last two are unhookers. Make it all small. Remember, the size of an issue or the size of the drama in your life is relative to your perception. Is it a big thing or a small thing? Well, when you're grounding, make it all small. I'm just a speck on a speck. I'm not on the earth long. It won't matter in the long run. Let go. It's not worth it. Two phrases like that. So bottom half, top half, breathe, shake it out, chill. I love me. It's all small. Let it go. The idea is to get grounded. The idea is to get centered, relaxed, mindful in the here and now. That's the space you want to be in when you start just about anything, and of course, especially in this show, an interaction. So we've been talking about George and Rhonda, a hypothetical couple, and we're going to use them as an example in today's episode, which is goodwill. We've mentioned it before. We've talked about some of the assumptions of goodwill, but it's tricky, and it takes a long time to get in the habit of putting mutual goodwill as a priority in any of my interactions. So we're going to slow it down, talk about it in some detail, and see if I can't help you get further down the road of developing this quality. Now, the art of relating is claiming that developing mutual goodwill is almost always, I want to say always, helpful in having a positive, effective interaction. Having both people feel good about themselves and good about each other and having that expressed in how they communicate can only help. I'm going to talk to you about some working assumptions of goodwill, and let me explain more carefully what I mean by that. Art of relating can train you to be, or may lead you to feel like a better human being, like your soul and ego are more in sync, like you're functioning at a higher level. And all of that may be true, but that's not where the training came from. It came from developing a set of concepts and skills that lends itself to successful interactions, to three-chip interactions. Remember, a three-chip interaction is when you get the business done, whatever you're interacting about, efficiently and effectively for both or all the members interacting. That's one chip. You win two chips if you can do that, get the business done, and treat each other with love and respect while you're doing it. So if you feel loved and you feel respected and you offer that love and respect and you get the business done, you have a two-chip interaction. And the third chip is a fun chip. So I'm having as good a time as I can have given the content. Sometimes that's heavy, and sometimes I might be sad or upset with how things are going, or in pain from an injury, for example. So it's not about making light of everything. You can react normally and naturally and appropriately to the content of what's going on, but still the third chip is about maximizing your chance of having a positive experience. If we get all three done, we got the business done, we treated each other with love and respect, and we had a good time while we were doing it, or as good a time as possible, we have what I call a three-chip interaction, and I'm looking to have as many of those as possible in the interactions I have on any given day. So to make that happen more often and in a better quality requires something I call mutual goodwill. Working assumptions of goodwill, what I want to use when I interact. Remember, I don't have to actually believe these things, although it's nice if I can, and I don't have to think that they're true, and I don't have to even actually have to be true, but working assumptions mean that I'm going to proceed in this interaction as though these three things are true. And there are three working assumptions I'm going to talk about, because that will increase the chance of us having a three-chip interaction, which, after all, is a way to discuss the goal of the art of relating. And remember, when we already agree on the content, it's easy to develop a three-chip interaction without conflict. There's no problem. Or if we have nothing to negotiate. I'm reminded of a couples that come to me when they first meet, they're attracted to each other. They have their best foot forward. They're dating each other, say George and Rhonda when they met. And at first, you know, they could go months without an argument or even necessarily a negative moment. But their feelings are sharp and strong. They have that initial attraction and magic dust. And they have nothing serious to negotiate. It's not until they're sharing a house or sharing a dog or sharing money or sharing a legal stance or children or parenting. When they start to negotiate all those things is when the skills start to matter. And when they don't agree about something is especially when these skills start to matter. So practicing these things, these working assumptions, is proceeding in any interaction as though these things are true. The first working assumption is that both you and the person you're interacting with, in our case, these episodes, say George and Rhonda, each see themselves as a, what I call, hero in their own movie. When I say movie, I mean the reality that they're living in. And remember, each of ours is different. And hero, I mean, they'll tend to see themselves as a good person trying to do good things. So if, suppose, for example, George comes home from work one day and he finds out that Rhonda took one of his favorite work shirts and threw it in the trash. Well, if George says, why are you trying to mess with me? This was an act of selfishness. He's not understanding Rhonda in accordance with this working assumption that she's a hero in her own movie. And if I talk to Rhonda and I say, what happened with the shirt? She will tell me that she wants George to look good at work. She cares about him. The shirt had a tattered edge or a small tear in it. And she realized they could afford to replace that shirt. And he really should, so that he looks sharp and clean and okay when he goes to work. What's wrong with that? Well, if George talks to Rhonda about it and assumes that she's a hero in her own movie, he's looking for that kind of motivation. He says, he doesn't say to Rhonda, this is why you did it, because he doesn't know that. He doesn't say to Rhonda, you were some sort of bad person for doing this, because that violates the principle. I'd rather he, in an open-ended way, say, so I noticed that you threw my shirt out. Like, what was up with that? And find out what she was thinking and feeling. And if he wants to understand her, which is essential to the art of relating and getting this item about shirts and what to do with them negotiated, then he wants to listen to her explain. And if he says, oh, I get it. So you want me to look good at work. You don't want me to wear frayed or torn clothing because it would take away from my professional presentation. Great. I appreciate that motivation, which is not the total resolution of the issue, and there's still things to talk about, but at least he's understanding Rhonda in accordance with that working assumption of she was trying to do something good because she's a good person for good reason, a hero in her own movie. By the same token, let's go back. George comes home, finds out the shirt has been thrown away. He says to Rhonda, you're being disrespectful and I'm annoyed that you threw my shirt away and that was aggressive. What are you, some kind of aggressive person? And Rhonda, hurt by all that, says, what's the matter with you? All you want to do is yell all the time. Now she, and granted it's a difficult moment, is violating the working assumption of hero in his own movie. I'd rather, if she could, stay grounded, hear George's annoyance, take a breath, and say, let me understand your anger and the vulnerability, more importantly, behind that. And, oh, so you felt like you want your autonomy with regard to your clothes and you like that shirt. And so it bothers you that it got thrown away without your permission. I hear all that. That would be the kind of response that would honor that working assumption and put them on a track where the solution might be more in sight of how to work this dynamic around clothing in the home. And I smile as I say clothing in the home because it may seem to some of you like a trivial issue. But remember, small issues or big issues, these concepts and skills remain the same. So, George, tell me about your world around how you came to throw the shirt out and recognize that she's a good person and did it for a good reason. That needs to be his assumption in understanding her. And her, understand his anger the same way. What are you protecting yourself from? Oh, I see. You want respect and you want to negotiate as equals and you want some autonomy about what you wear and how you wear it. Hear all that. That's reasonable. So what can easily be a very negative interaction becomes closer to a three-chip interaction if they accept that first working assumption of each person's a hero in their own movie, see themselves as a good person trying to do something good. You remember the movie Peter Pan? You know, George is going to want to play Peter Pan, or maybe Tinkerbell, or maybe Wendy, but he's never Captain Hook, not in his own mind. Although I did see someone the other day who said, I like being Captain Hook. But he said, Captain Hook's not a bad guy. He has his own thing to operate and deal with, responsibilities, etc. So even in that context, he was saying, yes, indeedy, I'm a good person trying to do good things. I just happen to like that character. Well, that was fine, and we both laughed. The second working assumption is that you know you better than I do. And I know me better than you do. So I speak for me, and you speak for you. Again, George may feel that he knows what's going on in Rhonda's head more than Rhonda does, but if he goes forward with that in mind, the conversation, the interaction, is going to be in trouble. Trust me. Rhonda knows Rhonda better than George. George knows George better than Rhonda. So, you know, Rhonda says, you say you didn't like me throwing the shirt out, but I know what you were really thinking or feeling. So that's a violation of the second working assumption, which is George knows George better than anyone else. And Rhonda violates that by saying, I know what you're really thinking. And that comes up a lot in interactions that I've dealt with. And to which George, if he understands this assumption, says, well, if you know me better than I do, you can have the conversation by yourself. A little sarcastic, a little edgy, but that's what happens when we violate the working assumptions. The other person will feel hurt or disrespected or some other or threatened, and then they're going to get angrier. That's common. Again, this isn't about being anyone's fault. It's just the way it normally goes between us. So in regard to the use of this second working assumption, each person, George and Rhonda, each must assert that if they are in the conversation, they speak for themselves. And the other person has to use the working assumption. So when George, say, reflects Rhonda, so this is why you threw the shirt out and this what you were feeling. If she says, yeah, they're communicating. That's a reality check. And he can then respond. If she says no, again, she knows herself better than he does. He wants to say, okay, I'll erase and record. What were you trying to say? Because only she would know that. Remember, nobody knows what she actually said. Try not to argue about that. George only knows what he heard, what it sounded like to him, but remember what he heard is a combination of sensation coming from Rhonda and projection coming from George. And once it's in his head, he can't tell the difference. So he never knows what she said. He only knows what he heard. And she also doesn't know what she said, but she is the only one who may know what she intended to say. So, following this working assumption, she knows herself best. If George reflects, if he says, here's what I heard just now, and she says, that wasn't it, speaking to her intention, what she meant to say, I want George to train himself to let her make that change. She may say, it's not a change at all. It's the same way I said it the first time. Either way, that doesn't matter. Let her go again. George's job at that moment is to erase and re-record. And remember, all of this goes in both directions. I'm just doing it as George reflecting Rhonda, but the same is true in reverse. So respecting both of these, this person's a good person in their own self-image, and they're trying to do the right thing or something caring or something good, and they know themselves better than I do, we're most of the way home toward establishing goodwill. There's one more working assumption that I want to talk about, and that is the working assumption that George may make, for example, that Rhonda is not messing with him on purpose. That is to say, she's being sincere about what she's sharing with him. Sincerity means, honesty means, sharing a map, say, from your head, something she experienced, something she feels, something she thinks, without consciously editing it for effect. So she's telling it the way it is in her head. It's not about accuracy. It's about sincerity. Being honest is being sincere. I'm speaking as cleanly as I can about what's in my head and heart. And that is honesty, and that's what I'm going to assume. That's what I want George to assume is coming from Rhonda, that she's being sincere. If he violates that working assumption, if he says, you're saying that, but I don't believe you, or I don't think that's sincere, you can bet that the interaction will likely not go well from there. Remember, lying is not about being inaccurate. In some ways, I'm not even sure what accurate means. Lying is about changing a map, sharing something I know is not true for me, for some other motivation, to get out of trouble, to get out of a trap, to make myself look better, for whatever reason. If I do values clarification with George and Rhonda, they both say being sincere, being honest, is important to the relationship. And that's easy to give unless there's pressure. If Rhonda, for example, is afraid that George is going to be angry about throwing the shirt away, he comes home and says, where's my shirt? And she says, I don't know, which she knows is not true. But she says it because she's afraid he'll be upset if she tells the truth, her truth, sincerity from her head. That can be very damaging in a relationship. But again, is it one person's fault, or is it a function of the interaction that causes that insincerity to happen? Well, if you're trying to establish mutual goodwill, and I hope you all are, then it's not about it being someone's fault, and there's always things either person can do to correct for it. I remember seeing another couple years ago, and he was a very hot-tempered, larger, more aggressive male in his style and personality. And all the time, his family would be less than sincere with him because they're trying to control for his temper. So if something came up and he asked a question about something they thought he wouldn't like, that's when it happens. That's a commonplace it happens. And then he would get all incensed that his family was being dishonest with him. But if you look at the whole dynamic, everybody shares some responsibility for how that's happening. You know, how do I protect myself without losing my temper? How do I protect myself in a given moment without being insincere? I mean, these are samples of the puzzles we get into. If Rhonda, for example, said, if George said, where's my shirt? And Rhonda said, take a seat, take a breath, slow down. Let's use our skills to interact about this. That might be a more effective start. You know, ground comes first. I'm not going to be insincere, but I don't want to be victimized by anger. Let's talk through this as the friends that we are, and we'll figure out a solution that will work. So I want to look at the case twice of the shirt being missing when George comes home from work. And I'm doing this in a traditional way, but it could be either gender and either role or position, of course. And George comes home from work. He finds one of his shirts is missing. To mangle this interaction, He's already getting buttons pushed. He's already annoyed. He already suspects that Rhonda did something terrible with his shirt, and he put terrible in there. This is all in the maps in his head, and he comes to her with that edge and say, "Where's my shirt?" And Rhonda says, "I don't know," which is not true for her even, but she has little choice if she's fearing getting her head taken off. So he says, "Don't lie to me." I mean, this first part of the example is mangling how this could happen. But look at it the other way. George comes home. He notices the shirt's missing. It pushes some buttons in him. He stops. He doesn't go to Rhonda yet. He grounds himself. Take a breath. It's all small. I'm a good person. It's just a shirt. Relax. Calm down. We love each other. We'll work through this. So he comes in, not, "Where's my shirt?" He comes in, "Hi, Rhonda." "Hi. When you have a moment, let's talk for a minute." "Okay," she says. "How was your day?" "Pretty good," says George. But when I came home, I noticed my shirt was missing. What happened there? Rhonda, not feeling as threatened or attacked, says, "Oh, I tossed that shirt." "Well, that's honest." "Because it had strips in it, and it was frayed on the edges." And George says, "So tell me what made you decide to do that, and how come you didn't ask me first?" She says, "Are you getting mad?" "No, I'm not feeling mad." Rhonda, also aware of the working assumption, says, "Good. I'm glad you're not getting mad, because I want you to look good at work, because we can afford a new shirt, because I don't want you to have to... I'm taking care of you. I'm caring about your presentation out in the world." And George says, "I appreciate that. And we can work out a way to manage these clothes items that makes us both happy. So good that we're talking about it. And thanks for caring. And let's work out a process of evaluating and making decisions about clothes so we don't step on each other's toes and so I don't suddenly have clothes missing. Would that be okay with you?" Rhonda says, "Sure. How do you want to do it?" George says, "If you see something not up to par in an article of my clothing, just put it aside and show me when I get home, and let's make a decision about that that makes sense to both of us and continue in goodwill." So see the complication of this. See how much there is that I can learn, that I can grow, that George can learn, that Rhonda can learn, and how long it would take to get all this in place to move George, say, from his immediate angry impulse where he violates the three working assumptions to a grounded place where he doesn't, is going to take a fair amount of training and practice. And so be patient with yourselves, take your time, and remember to visit Dyn Skills for more information, dynskills.com, or write to me, zach@kepw.org. And have a great week, and we will play more next Monday.